Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 25 of the Mini PC Show. This is Big Talk Little Machines. Today we've got the full family of podcasters with you. We've got Brian and Dor. Brian, how's it going, man?
Hey, Eric. Not too bad. Not too bad at all. I am surviving. I had a bit of a rough week this week, moving my services over from Comcast, the old dreaded Comcast story. Yeah. Go figure, an employee would have issues, right?
Well, anytime you change services from anything to anything, it's tumorous.
Oh, a nightmare. I almost lost my phone number. My wife had this phone number with her before she met me. And, of course, we ported that phone number over to Comcast Voice Services. And she's had it for 20-plus years. And because we moved 15 minutes away, put us in a whole new different rate center, which said, you know, hey, you can't have that phone number anymore. Well, nobody told me that. So it's been kind of a nightmare trying to get that phone number back so I can port it over to, like, a Voice over IP service or something.
But you got it back now?
Yeah, we definitely got it back. It took a while, but we got it back.
Yeah, doesn't Comcast have, isn't there something like an easy move service that they offer or something? Like, I remember an advertisement or something.
You know, there probably is. And for employees, you have to go through a different route. It's called a courtesy services process. And I guess it probably would have went a little smoother if there wasn't a whole lot of, hey, I thought you knew that. You know, it's been a while since I did any residential stuff.
Yeah, I can say if it's anything like my wife, when she goes to work to buy a car and they give her the employee discount, she ends up paying more than if she's a customer off the street.
Wow.
That doesn't sound right.
No, it doesn't sound right.
She's working at the wrong dealership. Because I remember I worked at a dealership, a couple of them. And
no, she's worked at least five, and they're all the same.
Wow. All right. That sounds horrible.
Because a employee, they don't have to make happy.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you don't buy a car from them, they will let you know that they don't appreciate that you did not buy a car from them. Hmm. In multiple ways. Sometimes it involves firing and termination.
Sure. I always got the like $200 above cost, whatever cost was, kind of thing.
Well, my wife knows their numbers because she handles their numbers. So she knows when someone says you're only paying $200 above cost, she knows, actually, you're charging me about $2,000 over cost.
Well, how can they do that to her, knowing that she knows that, and she could just be staring at them through their glass office wall the whole time? You are not cool, mister. That guy just staring at him.
I think they think that she better like her job.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's only one of her, and there's a lot of car lots door.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and
she knows that, doesn't she?
Prized. She is prized. She knows more about her job than most people in the state of Maryland. By most, I mean virtually everybody.
I should just give her a demo so she never even has to buy one. She just drives something nice all the time.
That's what I said. That's what I said, too. But that didn't work. So how are you doing, Eric?
I'm good. I'm really good. Going crazy. It's been really busy until today. Today kind of settled down. When I switched, I went kind of through a phone number porting thing, and I gave up on it, Brian. I ended up going to UMA, and UMA literally let me pick any phone number from anywhere that I wanted.
Nice.
And I ended up just changing the first three. You know how sometimes when you're moving across town, you'll have the same first three numbers, but the different four. Well, I kept the last four and changed the first three when I moved, so it wouldn't be too hard for people to remember my phone number from the old, because I couldn't get my old one back.
See, I think Eric might understand me, but I'm of a certain age. The only phone number I want is 867-5309.
Sure. And I did have one that spelled out. My Google Voice phone number spells out something, but I can't remember what it spells out, though. I don't even use it that much to even know what it is. How are you, Dor?
Slightly insane. A little bit bothered. My immediate boss put in his paperwork the other day. So I'm keeping my head very low and just doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, you're going to be jumping right into his office.
Oh, hell no.
sounds like the perfect time.
Yeah, it does.
The person right above him has called me by name poison to at least 4 people that I know of.
Huh. Wow.
So, no. No. There's no chance of me getting that job.
Yeah, you're just kind of hanging low. Stay out of his radar, huh? Well,
because
he's your boss as soon as your boss leaves, then? Until they get a new one?
Oh, no, I'm not doing anything they say.
Oh.
I'm a protected species. I'm on the endangered species. I mean, I'm a protected species. There's nothing that they can do to me.
The door muscle cannot be disturbed. build your bridge elsewhere.
Yeah, I just do my job, and I have no problem with saying I do my job better than anybody else has ever done my job. Oh. And if that's not good enough, get away. Go find somebody else, but I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing until there's somebody else who can do it.
That's good enough for me, Dor.
Well, that's because you have common sense. But the number one rule at my employer's establishment is, if it makes no sense, it must make sense.
Yeah. The guys at my job, they try to give me a raise. Seems like a civil enough thing, right? You know, just, Eric doesn't make any money. He works all the time. Let's pay him.
Mm-mm-mm-mm. Nope. Smells like a trap.
Well, it ends up... So an ordinance was just written that cuts my pay by a lot, down to $300 a month will be my pay as of the next election. And then I'm supposed to get the second title that will pay me the other money. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I hope it goes well. But seemed like a good thing at the beginning is just... It's too much work. Just leave me alone. I signed up for this pay. I don't care.
Well, Eric. I'm going to quote Hank Green. When people climb to the top of a hill, they don't go to other people and say, look at me, I climbed the top of a hill. People do that when they climb Everest. And I would say, this is just another one of those challenges in your path of life. And if I was in your jurisdiction, I would happily vote for anything that makes you happy.
Amen.
You should move out here, Dor. That'd make me happy. It's colder.
It's cold up there.
It's colder. Eric. You won't have.
I know it's colder.
You won't have to have that heat all the time.
No, but then I'll have to have a industrial sized snowblower.
some years, yes.
So I'll ask you, Eric. Is there anything in the realm of mini PCs in the last week that either you've experienced, you've done, or caught your interest?
Well, I wouldn't call them mini PCs, but I've been revisiting Android boxes for the television set.
Well, there are many computers. They're just ARM-based with custom Android OSs on them.
But that's something I've been playing around with. I didn't end up ordering anything, though, but I did a lot of looking and browsing, I guess.
Well, yes. I would highly encourage you to watch YouTube videos on Odroid C2s running Android and compare the experiences from what you see.
Okay.
Because you know what those Android TV boxes do and can't do.
Right.
And what they can't do is anything snappy.
Correct. And I'm hoping a 2 gig one may change that rather than a 1 gig one. Now, I was telling you guys before the show, and I don't know where this comes from, and I don't know why I'm the last to know about it, but I had at least 3 people come up to me this week and tell me that they have a Fire Stick in their living room that's hacked, that's getting, and this is their quote, all of them the same quote, and I don't know if the same guy is telling them. They got a hacked Fire Stick TV, and it gets everything. I didn't ask him to elaborate what everything is. Like,
this is like bell bottoms coming all around again. I mean, don't you remember like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when you would hear somebody say, I got this cable box and we get everything.
Oh yeah.
And do you remember when you saw that cable box, or did you ever see that cable box?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And it didn't get everything. It just got like pay-per-views and stuff.
Right.
And then in like 6 months or whatever, the cable company figured out and they blocked.
Yeah, the ones I remember it was the satellite boxes.
Right.
And they had something hanging out the back end of them or something, a little card.
So I'll take this as an urban legend until it's personally first person witnessed live and running. And even then I'm going to have a little bit of skepticism to it because what the hell is every? If you mean you can get 35 channels in different languages playing soccer, yeah. I believe
sure.
you.
Yeah, right.
You know, but if you're talking first run movies, first run television shows of all manners, I'm going to be very suspect.
Well, as somebody who owned a Chinese TV box from before, if they're side loading Showbox onto their Android TV stick, I could see if somebody has Showbox sideloaded, they could think that they are getting everything, I guess.
Well, but like, to me, if you don't get pay-per-views live as they're being published, you're not getting everything.
Yeah, there's no way they're getting that. I wouldn't help.
Well, I don't know how you could.
Right.
Because I know if I have a full desktop computer, I can get it. But I also have to worm my way through, like a ninja, through the Flash pop-ups to dismiss them in the right order to where I can get a full-screen view of the pay-per-view. And it's almost not worth the effort.
Right.
But on Android or any other device, I've never been able to even get remotely close to an acceptable pay-per-view without paying.
Well, I own the TV.
Who still watches pay-per-view?
Dor does.
Well, when it's UFC, I'm at least mildly interested in it.
Yeah, parties, man, right? Don't you go to parties at UFC fights?
Oh, I party hard.
Brian, you don't have UFC fight parties?
You know, Eric, no. They always used to say you have to fight for your right to party. I say you have to party for your right to fight. I'm just saying.
Wow. So as an owner of I'm an owner of a Fire TV stick. Maybe I will become the dark hacker and see what I can do with this thing. I was just gonna give it to my sister-in-law and get myself something new, but I never found that thing when I was doing my shopping. So maybe I'll just see what the hype is all about. And I'm not gonna pay Jimmy, you know, $35 extra to do it for me. I think I can figure it out myself. Whatever it is they're doing, and I'll report back to you so you can get what I think they're trying to talk about.
Okay, well, I will say this. If you're looking at Android TV set-top boxes on Amazon or wherever, look at the prices, and then go look at an Odroid C2. Because I can tell you, at least with the Odroid C1, as long as I don't load the rooted version, I can run everything flawlessly. When I have the rooted version on my Odroid C1, things like HBO Go will not play. Because it sees it's a rooted device and it just times out.
So the Odroid C2 does not come with... Does it come with the ROM and the operating system?
Well,
it does not.
Well, it's $41, I believe, still. Huh. You take a micro SD card, you install Android to it, you boot it to the first time. You see the hard kernel logo, which gives you the first indication these people are actually customizing this OS. And then you boot it up for the first time. First thing you have to do, just like any of these set-top boxes, go to Home, Settings, Apps, All, and disable everything you're not going to use for peak performance. Then go back and install your Google account, and then install things like Hulu, Netflix, Crackle, whatever kind of apps you want to watch, whether it be Kodi or Plex or anything else. But the idea of a home theater computer, this is the moving target. Because everybody you speak to is going to have a different target they want to hit. So if you can find your content on a normal Android device with an Odroid C2 for less than $50, you can hook one up to your computer, without a case at least, and find whatever you want and load it and run it.
That C2, is it the operating system, you know, like 4.1.1 probably, you think, or so?
It might be up to 5. Okay.
Because some of the boxes I was seeing were 5. So I thought that was kind of newer, so that was nice.
Well, and here's the yin and yang you got away. The newer the operating system, the less RAM you need for a good experience. Mm-hmm. Okay, 2 gigs to me is still the absolute minimum for even acceptable usage, which means you're not going to get exceptional screen response time on any device that has less than 3 gigs. Mm. And I've never seen an Android TV set-top box for less than $80 with more than 2 gigs.
Right.
This is true.
And the Odroid has 3 gigs, you think? Or 4 gigs?
I think it's
2 gigs.
Okay. All right.
But it is optimized for that hardware. This is the old Moto X philosophy, and I'm sorry for going at the Android.
Yeah, I brought it up. I thought that was for another show.
Well, the first Moto X that came out had a, let's say, specs of A, B, A, B, A, B, C. You took another device that had specs A, 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 compared it to the Moto X, and the Moto X would blow it out of the water. That's because Android was heavily optimized for that hardware set. Same thing with the Odroid C2. the OS that I see is pretty optimized for that hardware. So you get what looks like more than 2 gigs of RAM response time out of it.
Okay. Yeah, optimization will do a lot for it. So that's none of the links that we had brought to the show. And Brian, what mini PC type thing do you want to talk about? Because I kind of derailed us.
I was actually doing some thinking earlier today about the UDO board, the updated x86 processor that they've included on the UDO. And I just thought how much betterer, if that's even a word. That's the word that I was thinking of, but I know it's not a word. I was thinking of how much better that processor was and compared to the up board that was that we had talked about last week. Because I was kind of like drooling over that. I'm like, wow, this is a really nice board, you know? And then I got to think, I'm like, I wonder what's up with the UDO. How does this match up? And it just blew it away, you know, specs wise. And obviously the price, I would say, was comparison. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was about $99 for the upboard.
I think so, yeah.
And the UDO thing came in around $89, you know. So they were compared, but in performance-wise, I mean, I wish I had the numbers with me to even speak about it. But I just remember when I was looking it up earlier this week of how sexy it was.
Well, the upboard you can order right now. Supposedly, get it shipped in a couple weeks. The UDOO x86 board is still only on pre-order status. Now, realistically, I do expect these guys to ship quicker because these guys are established. They've been around the bases a while. They understand this mechanism. They understand this mechanic, and I'm sure they will fulfill. Right now, you can still pre-order them on Kickstarter. They're $89. The upboard starts at $80. But to me, $9 is not even worth mentioning the difference, to be honest. Okay, now let's take a look at the specs here, because I know they got to have them summarized in a nice, neat little fashion, because that would be nice. Well, first off,
the main one is 8 gigs of RAM, and that's crazy. That's nice for $90 on that board.
Oh, I agree.
Well, the low end has two gigs of RAM on the UDO, which I believe is the same starting RAM amount, at least on the upboard. The one, I'll say this, just looking at the UDO board, it definitely has more ports. Can't even compete with that, including it says it has a SATA connector, and it has a mSATA connector. Those two alone are definitely a differentiator, if I actually pronounce that word correct for change, to make it stand apart. That's really good. Yeah, if we look at the low end of the board, 2 gigs of RAM is the lowest you can get with 8 gigs of eMMC. eMMC is and should be quicker than virtually any SD card or micro SD card that you can get. If you bump it up to 4 gigs of RAM, it's only $109. I believe the upboard was closer to $130 when you got to 4 gigs of RAM. UDO is an established vendor as well, so I would expect their support and their operating system revision cycle to be really good.
Yeah.
Just because they want to save face. They want to make sure that they keep looking good. And this does have USB 3.0, okay? SATA connector and USB 3.0 and eMMC. Those three things do make it very, very sexy, dare I say.
Right, I think what the UP has going for them is the form factor of a Raspberry Pi, which hits a lot of the buttons, and it doesn't fit perfectly, but it does kind of fit in there enough where you can modify your existing case if need be. But with the UDO board, it's a little bit bigger, but it does, like you said, offer a lot more ports in addition to an Arduino board on board with the x86 platform, which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even if this is twice as big as a Raspberry Pi, that's not a big deal. This is a 4.72 inches by 3.35 inches, so it might be just about twice as big as a Raspberry Pi, but the port availability blows it away.
Yeah.
Also, I finally saw an upboard with a heatsink on it. It's literally like 80% of the board. It is huge, which I would expect it to be because it's x86. And I gotta say this, my heart lies with ARM architecture because it's the underdog, because it's the upstart in the consumer's eye. It's not as popular. I want ARM to take off. With Flash dying, it has much more possibilities. But when you go x86, you get the comfortable thing in your head of anything I loaded on my desktop, anything I loaded on my laptop, anything I loaded on my server, anything I've ever loaded anywhere on any computer, I should be able to load on this as well. And that is, you can't put a value on that. You really can't. So the idea of an x86 mini computer is definitely becoming more appealing to, and I don't want to say my laziness, but convenience is a thing that us Americans, at least, we put it at a really high level. And this is really convenient. And they even have the Ultra model, the Ultra UDO, UDOO x86, with 8 gigs of RAM, with a 2.5 gigahertz processor with 4 cores. Oh, Brian, do you know what I could do with that?
I know what I could do.
I mean, yeah. There's a lot I could do with that. I could literally load my VM for editing on that and still be fine because I only need like 2 gigs of RAM. Every mini computer I have right now at the most has 2 gigs of RAM. So if I try to load my editing VM on it, even if it was x86 architecture and with VMware, or not VMware, VirtualBox and blah, 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 it would run really slow. I could get one of these things with 8 gigs of RAM and literally use it as a production rig. And if you're a sadist, a sadomasochist, if you're a glutton for punishment, if you're a Nazi, maybe even, you could even run Windows on this thing.
Whoa, wait a second.
I'm sorry.
I hear what you're saying. It's not just the easiness and the convenience, but sometimes, so I don't know, personally, me and I think Dora too, you just run out of time to tinker all the time. You know, you just got to get work done. And right. I think a lot of us are there, Dora. A lot of Americans, we've got so many things going on, working more than 40 hours every week. And
yeah.
Right. And with my age, this is why I run Ubuntu long-term support edition on all my computers. Because I never have to worry about them. I just install what I want to install. I hit update. I hit upgrade. And voila. Mm. It works. I don't have to hassle. I don't have to tinker. I don't have to recompile. I don't have to reconfigure. I don't have to dig. I don't have to troubleshoot. I don't have to worry. I don't have to stress. For the most part. And that's what this kind of offers. And I will say, if you scroll down and, oh man, these Kickstarters, Brian, I don't know about you, but it's like 25 page downs until I finally get to the actual hardware specs and the different bundles that they're offering. And I gotta say, some of these bundles look damn appealing.
Yeah. Like,
I just feel like I can't look directly at them.
Yeah. Just so, get your PayPal card out, Dora.
Yeah.
Pre-order that stuff.
So I pulled the trigger on I know we were talking about this last week. It was the HD Home Run Prime. Mm-hmm. So I ended up pulling the trigger on that and got a cable car going. Cable car installation was a bit tedious and long, but eventually I got it going.
Did you have to spend a lot of time on the phone to get it going?
I did. Yeah, I did. The reason being is because... here again, it's been a while since I've been in the residential side of things, so I wasn't sure how the process went. So a lot of that was steps that I did wrong that made it take longer than it should have. But I ended up getting 2 cable cards, and the second one was the winner. But when I got it going, you can clearly see the quality difference of the tuners compared to a tuner in an HD Prime box from Silicon Dust. And a tuner in, like, say, an X1 cable box, you know, Xfinity cable box. It just tunes much quicker. There's less digital tiling or digital artifacts with a cable box tuner compared to, you know, a tuner from Silicon Dust. I mean, we're talking, what, a little over $100 for the unit. And, you know, right. Cable boxes are way more expensive than that.
So you're seeing better performance out of the set-top box?
I'm seeing better performance out of my cable box, which I can understand why.
Out of the cable box than the silicon dust box?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, really? Now, the X1 system works better than the silicon dust one?
Yes. From a picture quality-wise? Well, let me rephrase that. So, yeah, no, it is, yes, from a picture quality-wise. If you're looking at a high-def picture side-by-side, you probably might not notice it, but when it comes to, like I said, digital artifacts and digital tiling, yeah, it's a lot better. And
well, that's saying something.
Yeah, and that's surprising. And these are brand new lines that I ran. It wasn't like, you know, I hooked up one on an old line and I had one on Wi-Fi. These were, you know, brand new Cat 5 line that I ran. As a matter of fact, one line is a fiber, which goes into a switch, which is Cat 5. So there's plenty of bandwidth there. There's plenty of data there.
So only Cat 5?
Yeah, so how the box is configured, the silicon dust box, it has a coax input from your service, and then the output has a USB and a Cat 5, and obviously the input for the cable card slot. And the USB is for companies that provide switch digital video. So if you have switch digital video in your network, you get to take this little additional hardware that connects via USB to the silicon dust box. I don't have that here, so I didn't really need to use that. Just Cat 5 out to my network, and then whatever device that's connected to my network gets the ability to tune in to the three tuners that are built into the silicon dust box. So it was actually really cool how it worked.
Well, dumb question. I mean, could it be the limitation of that port being only Cat 5, or do you think you could have went faster than normal Cat 5 speeds? Because normal Cat 5 is not really speedy. Cat 5e is when you start to get into the high bandwidth.
No, I threw that out there. That's the general term that I tend to use. It was Cat 5e. Okay. Yeah, I haven't upgraded to Cat 6. I don't really see the need for that. But
well, see, 5e should be enough to give you comparable, if not better, picture quality just based upon that. So the limitation is in the chip itself or in the box itself, I'm guessing, turning it down. Not getting as good picture quality and possibly, or in fact, seeing more digital artifacting for some people is a complete game breaker.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, when you're recording something, you don't want to see a lot of freezing, a lot of digitization. You don't want to see that, you know.
Now, what comes out of the silicon dust box, you said it was Cat 5. And that goes then to
your network.
Your network. And then how does it get to a television? Are you using it on television?
Yeah, so I have a Xbox One, and you can tune in. You can tune in to the tuners with an Xbox One. Yeah. You can use PlayStation 3. I have that. You can tune into, or you can use your laptop, or you can use a regular Windows PC with the silicon dust software that allows you to tune in to the tuners. But like I said, the technology I think is pretty awesome. I love it. I love the ability to be able to watch television on my computer if I wanted to, or my wife's computer, or the kids' tablets and stuff like that. But if it was my only source of entertainment and I didn't have any cable boxes, I think I would. I would want to get a cable box.
But there's no HDMI though. You can't just go straight into a television or HDMI into your Xbox One.
No, that's the beauty of it. So it's a network video capturing device. Yeah.
Yeah, the HDM run, now, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, it is the device that can act like a DVR. It is the device that can tune. It's the device you use as a tuner to where you change channels.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, to me, the possibility with those devices is ridiculous. The only limitation is what the companies let you do.
Right, exactly. And like I said, if it was my only source of entertainment and this is what I wanted to do, and I wanted to get a couple of those things and get six tuners in so everyone has their own tuner and get a tuner for a recording and stuff like that, then yeah, I think I would be pretty disappointed when it comes to the quality of the content that I was recording and not being able to get certain things and stuff like that. I would be pretty bummed out. But this was more of a, hey, I wonder if this would be an option or a solution to look at. And
right, well, the only follow-up question I have is, because to me, digital artifacting and the ripping, tearing is more of a issue when you're dealing with sporting events, because they're all fast-paced. Mm-hmm. I mean, even baseball, the camera jars left and right. Are you close enough to a metropolitan region to where you could set up a HD antenna? And now with that said, I believe with the HD home run, you can connect it to a HD antenna. So you still only have to go to one centralized place to view all your content.
Right. And I my original HD home run I had was for over-the-air broadcast digital television and like a cable service without using the cable card. And so that worked pretty good, but it was a little out of date to connect it to Kodi. So I wasn't able to stream content via Kodi with it. With the Home Run Prime box, you can. But so, I mean, you could still tune in using your PC or using a game console or even a tablet. And that still works pretty good. And I do have a lot of good signal for over-the-air HD content. I actually have to finish running the antenna in the attic so it gets enough signal. But I did that in my previous home, and it worked pretty good. It was more of a novelty thing. You know, if I didn't have a cable box, then it would probably be a little bit more involved in it. But I think once I start pulling out the boxes, it'll be different.
With this device, say somebody want, what did the, well, you get the Home Run Prime, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did that cost for that box? For that device,
I've been watching it for a while. I kind of overpaid for it because I really just want. Like I said, I pulled the trigger. I said, you know what? I got a little money. I'm gonna do this. Mm-hmm. So it ran me around $130.
Okay. Now, the other boxes in people's houses cost anywhere from $3 to probably $10 to rent from your cable provider every month. Could you buy this one time and then run them off of PlayStation 4s and Xbox Ones on every TV and just get rid of that recurring costs with your cable provider?
Absolutely. And that, I think that's where the incentive is for someone that really knows how to do projects like that, you know, to get like an Odroid and, you know, see a set top box under $50, run an Odroid and put Android on it. And you can stream all your local content, you know, sporting events and things like that. I would definitely do it on the wire and not via wireless. But that's definitely the goal.
And the cable card, is that a recurring cost from a cable provider? Do you have to
It's really low. I think it was like $2 to me, $2 and $4 a month. But I think the first one is free, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So, I mean, I have a DVR box, so my DVR box is like $15 a month extra. So I definitely would like to get rid of that and use the Prime.
Yeah. Yeah, pay for itself pretty quickly.
Right.
If you can get over it, you know.
Yeah, I got to do some finagling. I mean, right now I don't have any amplifiers or no elaborate setups. So it's the service line comes in, it goes to like a four-way splitter, and I have, you know, my cable box, my cable modem, and the Home Run Prime and some other things off of that splitter, and they're all getting pretty good signal quality. And that's what I'm looking at the pictures side by side, both pictures side by side. One's tiling and one isn't.
Hmm.
And I'm like, they both have the same signal. I'm watching the signal. It's not dipping. It's not jumping. Signal to noise quality is steady. It's on the money. And the only thing that I really can't see is the errors. The errors on both sides. I can probably use some fancy tools to look at the errors on the cable box, but I can't see the errors on the actual Home Run Prime box.
Yeah, and has it been updated? Did it update itself or anything since you installed it?
It did, and you know what? It was funny you mentioned that, because it did have the latest firmware for the Home Run Prime, but there is a firmware that I needed for the cable card, for the Motorola cable card, and that was the sticky process I was having when I was actually trying to do the installation, because it began and it failed. And I'm like, well, why did it fail? And it got stuck. But I ended up getting all my channels and it still works. So I was asking the question, so what does this firmware upgrade do? And I'm not really getting a firm answer on that. So I'm wondering if it has to do with picture quality or anything like that.
And all the people on the street, they keep asking me right now. They're over there. Can you hack it and get everything?
Can you? I'd say go with Kodi. I've been able to get somewhat of good performance using Kodi.
Yeah, Kodi's got a lot of plugins.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I mean, it's not ethical, but I enjoy it.
Or in English, but that, you know, whatever. Dor, what? Your turn.
How you doing?
Yeah, well, I'm doing pretty good. Have you been playing with or studying any mini PC typed devices this week?
Well, I mean, I feel almost mandatory that I now have to chime in at least with home theater type stuff. And what I'm going to say is there's an Android application that I've used to basically be the hero in my house. Every time any family member says to me, "Oh, I'd like to watch insert title here." I haven't seen insert title here. I was told about insert title here. Whatever. I always pull up this Android app, and it should be appearing in our notes any second now, for an Android app called Just Watch. I do believe they have a full desktop interface for this, so you don't need the Android app. I use the Android app because I got my phone right on me at all times, basically. So, like, for instance, tonight, my wife said, "You know, I'd like to watch this movie. I think it's called Spotlight. How can I watch it?" I just pulled up Just Watch, typed in Spotlight, hit enter, saw Spotlight from 2015, clicked it, and it told me, well, right now it's available on Netflix, or, you know, right now it's available on Hulu, or right now it's available on Amazon Prime, or right now you can rent it from the Microsoft Store, or right now you can rent it from the Sony Store, or iTunes, or whatever. This will tell you about pretty much any service out there that can stream content, or rent content, or buy content from, and it will tell you which one is available. And a very simple interface is all I got to say. Very simple interface. So I was able to tell my wife, "Oh, you can turn on Netflix right now, it's there," or Epix, or whatever. So this has been my go-to to help my family's needs for home theater type content.
Yeah, Just Watch is nice.
Yeah, because for me personally, my home theater solution is I just load up YouTube and I just watch videos. whether it's Crash. I mean, almost everything I watch is educational based. It's either Cosmos with Carl Sagan, Connections with James Burke, SciShow, Crash Course. Any kind of educational content is what it seems like I always watch. So my home theater needs are quite basic, I will say. But I'll say in the realm of mini computers, the thing that caught my eye, and it literally took me a little bit to compute, it's line 216, I believe, in our notes. It was an article on Lifehacker describing how now on your Raspberry Pi 3, you can boot the Raspberry Pi 3 from a hard drive over Ethernet, which
from a hard drive or Ethernet.
Yeah, or Ethernet, which I literally had to like just sit there and read it like 5 times to even start to comprehend. Wait a minute. What? So literally I can have my Pi connected to my network and at boot have it reach over the network or to a hard drive and get the boot sequence from that and boot up.
Isn't that called remote installation?
Well, this isn't remote installation. This is remote operating system. So it's the same concept, but instead of just booting a live instance to proceed with installation, you can actually boot the entire operating system. Which I will say, the number one thing I can tell you right now is you better be running a light operating system that can basically be stored in RAM, or else you will see a little bit of lag and a little bit of performance issues. But this is not for performance. This is so you can swap out Raspberry Pi devices and always have the same experience. Mm. That's what this is really for. So to me, this is good news. This is big news. This is showing how, even though the Raspberry Pi now it has to be 3 years old, I believe it's actually 4 years old or more, it's still growing as in concept, as an idea, as an ecosystem, as infrastructure, it's still growing, which to me, that's what I took from it. So this to me was very impressive that they're still pounding out new ideas and making new things work. I thought this was pretty impressive.
Go ahead, Brian.
I was wondering, are there any bandwidth limitations?
There is bugs that I'm sure will cause a lot of issues with a lot of different OSs that you try. But basically, as long as it's a ARM-based operating system with a ARM-based kernel, from what I could tell, you can boot it. This is almost like Pixie booting when it's over Ethernet. It wouldn't shock me if it basically uses the same type of protocol, even if it's a USB hard drive. Because over the network, the beautiful thing about network shares is it completely normalizes the remote file systems into a standard format. It wouldn't shock me if they basically do the same thing with USB and just standardize, no matter what it is, natively, FAT32, NTFS, 64, we're going to perceive it as this one based file system.
Oh.
And it's still very new. I wouldn't expect this to run perfect. I wouldn't expect this to run flawless. I wouldn't expect this to run anything like a local SD card put in it. But it is the kind of thing, it's going to grow. It's going to get better over time.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if my Pi drive booted from the drive or if it was from an SD card. But I can't. I was just going to pull the SD card out if there's one in it still. I was going to pull it out and see what happens.
Well, the normal way virtually everything does right now is you start your Linux boot from your SD card. It has your boot partition. It has all that. But then during the boot sequence, it hits this file called fstab, which basically means file system table. When it hits that file, it then says, okay, map this folder over the network. So it's going to appear like everything in your operating system, like it is a local drive to that operating system, yet it's either a USB device or a network device.
Okay.
So basically, they're moving that step, exact same step, they're basically moving it up earlier in the boot sequence, to where instead now it's actually mapping the boot partition to a remote device or a USB device.
Wow. This is actually...
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder how, you were talking about performance-wise, I wonder how they are able to get away with gaming over the network. I wonder how that's working out. I haven't really touched on that at all.
Well, I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts. It basically loads the entire OS into RAM. I've ran a couple Linux distributions in the past. Slax, S-A-L-X, Slitaz, S-L-I-T-A-Z. Are examples of OSs that after you boot, you can pull the hard drive off and it will still run because everything is in RAM. So I'm sure it tries to shove everything as much as possible into RAM. So when it comes to gaming, I would not expect snappy performance. I would not expect quick response time. Mm-hmm. And I would expect loading because it's going to have to basically swap out stuff. Now, I'll say this, I haven't looked at it, but if it is using the SD card as swap, it would make the transition from a full desktop OS to a full screen game possible, but it also ain't going to be quick.
All right.
And my Chrome is definitely taking its sweet time.
No, I just went over to the Western Digital Pi Drive website, and they've got some new products actually from Western Digital since last time when I put my order in. They have a couple different. They've got a 4x4 inch blue square enclosure, and I'm not sure, but it seems like these are not just for the drive. I think it's for the Pi and the drive. I could be wrong, but then they got 4x4, 6x6. They've got quite a few different enclosures they've been working on. Because the one I got's kind of generic, but it's just weird looking.
How's that running for you still?
It's running fine. I don't do much with it. I mean, I mostly play around with RetroPie on it and stuff like that. But it's not failing. I'm not throwing a ton of stuff at it though either.
It's pretty responsive.
Yeah, it's been pretty good.
Well, I'll say.
And that's on a Pi 2.
It's hard to go wrong. Right. Oh, yeah, the Pi 2 is plenty powerful enough. When you're going with stuff like RetroPie, the Pi 2 is definitely perfectly fine. And I will say, that's an example of an operating system honed to the hardware. I saw when I played with RetroPie on my Pi 2, I was very impressed at the performance, the response time, the load time of every game that I played. When I got up to the N64 stage on the Pi 2, that's when games just took a dump. And I was literally seeing like one frame every 2 minutes. When I went to the Pi 3, that's when I was starting to see more respectable frame rates. But I think it wasn't an issue of hardware with the Pi 3. I think it was literally performance and software tuning.
I gotcha.
It looks like there was a new RetroPie released on the 4th of June. So I might have to look to update in mine. I let it do the scrape. I just got the thing scraper. It doesn't really find anything though. I gotta go find some more sources for old retro games.
Oh, and that scraper, let me tell you something. It can take a while to go through all of its stuff. Here's what I told a buddy at work. ROM downloads are still questionably legal. The law did change. For instance, if the company is no longer in existence and there's nobody who bought the rights to those games, if you cannot contact somebody about, can I download your games, the judges are much less likely to penalize you for it. If you own physical copies of the game, the judges are much less likely to penalize you for it. Now, with that said, these sites where you can download ROMs are among the filthiest and dirtiest sites you've ever seen in your life.
Kind of like when you're looking for a pay-per-view, the kind of same maneuvers back and forth, sliding through.
Worse. This is like when you, back in the day, Eric, 8 years ago, had customers who were porn addicts.
Oh.
And literally their computers, every time they got it back, would get infected right away.
Yeah.
So the first place I would go to look, if you're looking to download ROMs of any game, is archive.org, because it's archive.org. You ain't got to worry about it, okay? It's a safe site to go to. After that, to be honest, what I do, the only way I download ROMs that I feel at all safe is on a Linux computer or on an Android device, because all of the malware, all of the infectable software on those websites are always focused towards Windows, at least for now. That might change, but do not go to those. Do not try to download any ROM for any emulator on Windows ever. That's my biggest piece of advice, because you will get infected. It's only a question of, is it the first game, the third game, the 10th game, but sooner or later you will get infected.
Yeah.
Because there is no one site that has everything.
And sites like that, within 5 minutes, or what am I saying? Within 5 seconds of being on the site, you're going to be, whoa, this is all right. You know. I mean, if you've been there, you know that there's nothing good that can come of this on a Windows machine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if you fixed a lot of old viruses the way they used to be.
Yeah. And the two OSs for these mini computers to play old school games is RetroPie, RetroPie, or Lakka, which I believe is Lakka.tv. Those are the two OSs you want to download, play with if you want to do any kind of retro gaming at all. They're both really good. They became mature more recently, but I've seen nothing but rock solid stability out of them.
Nice. I will start looking on a safe computer to see if I can. And hey, I may not have the cartridges, but I know I've got the instruction books for every video, all the Atari and Intellivision games that I had. I remember taking a bunch of pictures of those and sent them to Sean Johnson. And then I sent him the Intellivision.
That's cool. Put them on the Google Drive.
Okay.
I was just teasing. I got a ton of ROMs somebody gave me years ago. All old Japanese games, arcade games.
I used to have them for Game Boy. Back in the day, we used to hack Game Boys. Or was it Game Boys? DS3s? I think it was DSi. DSi. That's what it was. I used to hack those. Throw a bunch of games on an SD card, something like that. Yeah, and then the SD card went into a cartridge, maybe? And the cartridge, I think that's how that worked.
Yeah, they had more than a couple of them. Now, like, here's a example of, at least on archive.org, I'll have a link in the notes. It's basically a collection of MAME ROMs, M-A-M-E ROMs. MAME stands for Arcade Machine Emulator, because there were many different chipsets on arcade machines. So this basically tries to support all of them. It's 51.2 gigabytes worth of data.
That's a lot.
So this is basically every arcade machine that ever existed. It isn't, but you might as well say it is, because any game you can think of will be there. But I will also encourage people, ridiculously, if you download this, do not just hand this blob over to a child to play, because there are many Asian adult games in this collection.
Okay.
By what do you mean, Dor?
Oh, what do you, Brian? That's what your whole thumb drive was full of. Exactly what he's talking about.
Well, if you were around back in the days of bulletin boards, and you remember when you clicked a picture and it would take a minute and a half to download that picture, they look a little bit like that.
I've never played those games. I have no idea what. All I think of is it's some kind of like.
Of course, you didn't play them. You were in America.
Right. But I think of like a choose your own adventure sort of soap opera type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. The games are literally like bad puzzle games, and then every puzzle piece you get correctly, it clears a little bit of the picture in the background.
Oh.
Or it's like pinball ish games with when you clear a stage, you get rewarded with a picture kind of thing. These are completely different, culturally speaking, games. There is no Space Invaders, there is no Dig Dug, there is no Street Fighter, there's nothing like that when you're talking about these adult overseas games. You will load them up and say, what the hell is this? And then, like a minute into playing them, you'll be like, oh, righty. And then, you know, hit escape, cancel, and then delete it.
So it's basically like every game I've ever played.
No comment.
I just can't get into any of them, but I like to see them all for about 5 seconds.
Okay. There was one other link I really wanted to talk about really quick, and it's the empowerment that comes with these mini computers. And the empowerment comes with how affordable they are. Now, typically, when people think affordable stuff, they think, well, it's hackable. That means guys with crazy neck beards will be able to buy these and, like, get everything ever available on TV for free kind of thing. Here is an example of basically, to me, something completely polar opposite on line 212 in our notes. A 9-year-old inventor took a Raspberry Pi, hacked together a little bit more hardware using a Sense Hat, was one of the main pieces of hardware, and a Raspberry Pi, and he was able to make an asthma sensor, or monitor, excuse me. This is the kind of empowerment, as far as I'm concerned, where it's really bringing things down a level to where anybody can do it. I mean, if a 9-year-old can configure and create a asthma monitor, I mean, what can't we do with these devices?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Asthma. In the past, he would never have had access to any of these parts, even if he had an idea.
Well, it would have cost too much money. His dad would have told him, you ain't playing with him. Are you crazy? This is the kind of thing where there's a lot of things that give me no hope for the future. Like when a kid says, why is this group called the Beatles copying One Direction? To me, that's an indicator that there's no hope for the future, okay? No hope whatever for the future. But this kind of thing where a 9-year-old is creating an asthma monitor gives me real hope for the future.
Did you just base the future off the Beatles?
I always have. I mean, why change now? There was another one in here. Let me see if I can find it. Oh, okay, 209. Matthew Williams, Lord Drakenblut.
And
every time I say that, I think I say it wrong. Well, yeah. Well, he, through the graciousness of one of his family members, was able to support a Kickstarter. That was line 209 for us. For a device that I'm at least moderately familiar with. GPD is a well-known manufacturer of mobile hardware devices. I have a a Game Boy 3DS form factor computer, flipped the lid up, one screen on the top, lots of buttons on the bottom, and it runs Android, and it runs it really damn good. And the hardware is really great. I'm not going to say it's perfect, I'm not going to say it's the best ever, but it is damn good. It is easy 95th percentile in hardware. GPD did a Kickstarter, successful Kickstarter, for a Windows-based 5-inch screen foldable pocket mobile computing device, and they have actually, since the successful Kickstarter, upped the hardware specs, and they've released more than a couple videos of this device in action. It is due to ship, I want to say, in the next 2 months. They've shown it both running Windows 10 and Ubuntu. They've shown it running games like Dark Souls, which it ain't no chumpy game. This isn't like Dungeons and Dragons for the Intellivision. This is a full color 3D over-the-shoulder third-person game that looks to me kind of like Skyrim-esque, and it was running it surprisingly well. I was very impressed. You can still go, and I believe you can still pre-order if you want these devices. The GPD handheld pocket Windows computer. Man, it looks really well, is all I gotta say. And every time I see it running a game or running a desktop, it actually looks plausible as being a usable desktop. So I think these guys are definitely doing something right. I definitely think they're onto something. I wish them nothing but success. I hope they sell a hell of a lot of these things, because the more they sell, the more they can bring the price down.
How big would you say the screen is in the one you have from them?
The screen I have is probably, well, the device is virtually the exact same size as my OnePlus One, but the screen itself is probably about 4.5 inches, maybe 4.7 inches. It isn't 5, I don't believe, but it's decent size. This looks a little bit bigger. This screen, I believe, is 5.5 inch touchscreen, QWERTY keyboard, dedicated gaming buttons, quad core Atom processor, I believe 2 gigs of RAM is the... I'm sorry, 4 gigs of RAM you can get in this device. This is a crazy pocket device, is all I gotta say.
Yeah, it is. I wouldn't see my kids for a good month if I gave them one of these.
Yeah. Now, the only thing I worry about this device is, and this is, to me, a legitimate concern, what do you do if you get a crypto locker or ransomware type virus on this when it's running Windows? I don't think you can connect a USB drive and boot to like Hitman Pro.
Huh.
That's the only thing that I worry about. And I will say I'm a worrywart. I over worry things that sometimes I don't have to worry. But with this, I think it is a genuine concern that scares me at least a little bit running Windows on it.
Yeah, that's legitimate.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's the maker of this?
GPD.
GPD, which stands for Gamepad Digital. They're at least a little bit popular overseas. I don't think you can find a single one of their devices in any American store, unless, of course, it's a pawn shop or something, maybe. Another one here that honestly caught my eye a little bit. There's two more, I'm going to say, that caught my eye. One of them, just for the novelty of it, is the best I can say. Line 217 in our notes. They say it's called KeyPi, KEYPI, and it says a cheap, portable Raspberry Pi laptop, in quotes, under $80. Okay, this is not really portable, folks, okay? It's kind of portable. I wouldn't say it's really portable. If you click the link in the notes, it goes to a Structables page where it's a full desktop keyboard, but on the right side where the numpad would be, they basically got rid of all the keys and they put like a 3.5 inch screen on top of it. So it's a portable keyboard, desktop keyboard, with a screen built into it and a Pi built into it. I love the idea of it. I gotta say that without a shadow of a doubt. Uh-huh. I love the idea of it, but it's not really portable because it's a honking keyboard. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But for less than $80, if you were at all interested in taking a unused keyboard that you have with a full numpad on the side, the Raspberry Pi, $35. The 18650 battery, $6.50, they say. A DC boost converter, $2. A battery holder, $1.50. And the touchscreen, $21. You can make yourself a at least mini full computer. I don't want to call it portable, but a mini full computer.
Just be a good word processor. You need to write a book.
Right, or a good IRC client if you can read small text.
That's a nice little idea.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I wanted to talk about. The other one I wanted to talk about is on line 220. And this one I just found interesting. And it's a Raspberry Pi Sense Hat. Now, Raspberry Pi Sense Hat is an extra piece of hardware you can get to stick on top of the Raspberry Pi, which gives you a bunch of sensors, gyroscope, I believe magnetometer. It gives you a couple buttons, and it gives you a little LED panel of lights that you can manipulate. To be honest, a pretty cool piece of hardware, but hypothetically, let's say you can only afford one of them, and you already have one of them doing something. Well, then how are you going to do something else? Well, the question is answered over there at raspberrypi.org. A Sense Hat emulator. So it's a full emulator running basically in Python that gives you the exact same interface to the Sense Hat and gives you a little screen off to the side showing you what's happening with the Sense Hat. So you can virtually trigger the LED lights on it, or you can virtually have triggered the sensors on it, and you can see what would happen in your Python program. I'm a sucker for emulation, and I like the fact that I can program against something for free and then pay the money, get the device, get it in my house, and then connect it and have it already work.
Yeah. I see if you can get it working first before you do drop the money on it.
Right, and you can see, will this do what I want it to do, kind of thing.
From reading the comments, it sounds like Flappy LED will work on it.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm sold. Yeah, it has a temperature sensor, a humidity sensor, and it looks like possibly a light sensor on it.
Oh, yeah.
Or virtual temperature sensor, where you can manipulate the temperatures to have it trigger events. A virtual humidity sensor or a virtual light sensor. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, I like that.
Hey, was there anything else you guys wanted to bring up in this episode?
I think I'm about out for today. How about you, Brian?
I have a bit of a dilemma that I think I might end up throwing money at the problem versus being a little tech savvy, which is kind of disappointing. But I might not have to. So I have, in my old house, I didn't have a sprinkler system. And this house has a sprinkler system with 11 stations. And for me, that's a little overwhelming since I didn't have one before. Now, all of a sudden, I got to deal with this thing. So it's a Hunter Pro C. Has a Hunter Pro C controller. And how you actually end up controlling this thing or programming it, it's a little weird, man. I really don't like it at all. And I'm thinking it's actually the controller head's in the shed, which is about 50 yards from the house. So I gotta go every time when it rains, because there's a rain sensor on it, but actually there's a rain sensor option without the sensor. So either I buy a sensor and put one on there, or I gotta walk down to the shed every time it rains and shut it off. So, you know, I'm not wasting water, overwatering the lawn. And I'm thinking, I need to upgrade this system somehow. How am I going to either do it with a Raspberry Pi or call a punter and say, hey, do you guys have an upgraded system that will allow me to use a tablet or, you know, a handheld device or something to connect to it remotely? Because this is getting tedious. And I don't know. I've been doing some research on, not enough research, but a little bit to see what it would take to attach an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi to it. And I don't know, I just don't feel motivated enough to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Does it like turn them on separately? It's not that sophisticated that it turns on different zones based on like their moisture content and the.
No, not the moisture content, but each zone, each station is programmed obviously to turn on at a different time and to run for so long because they all can't run at the same time. Well, they probably could, I guess, but I don't really want to do it that way. So I've never touched it since the original homeowner moved out, so it's still programmed the same way he had it.
Okay, but that doesn't work for you.
Well, my wife's complaining of the sprinkler system running all the time, and I, for one, would prefer that it would run early in the morning, like, 3 a.m. or 5 a.m. That way, the sun can burn off all the excess water instead of running it at 8 o'clock at night, so all that water doesn't sit on the lawn overnight. But, I don't know. I hate going down there and trying to program this thing because it's not simple if you don't really understand it, That's my
dilemma. Looks like Dor found the Hunter Industries manual for resetting Pro C controllers.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's in the notes now. And he found the Open Sprinkler Pi link also in there.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the best way I can say this. This is not a super simple thing to do because you have to deal with all the individual pieces of hardware. You having 11 different sprinklers, Brian, let me tell you something. The number of devices you want to control will directly affect how much money you're going to spend if you want to do this with a mini computer. If you only had two sprinkler heads pop up, this could be probably really dirt cheap and easy to do. But with 11, it might be a little bit more difficult. Over at raisehobby.net, he basically has Open Sprinkler Pi extension board for the RPI, where it basically has the little like IO places where you basically connect the wires to turn on and turn off stuff. I don't think there is a pluggable solution that I know of where this would quote unquote just work out of the box. Right. This is going, if this is something you want to approach with a mini computer, this is going to take elbow grease, and this is going to take, I hate repetitively quoting George Harrison, but it's going to take a whole lot of time, a whole lot of precious time, and it might take some money, a whole lot of spending money.
I agree with your wife. I don't like them running all the time either, and the more they sprinkle, the more you got to mow.
That's my thing. Testify, brother. And I'll say part of me now, when I got my new house and the sod was brand new, they insisted to me, as soon as it gets dark, that's when you want to water. Mm-hmm. Because it will make everything stay as long as possible in the water, get absorbed as much as possible into the land. The worst time to sprinkle is first thing in the morning because humidity, it will evaporate most of the water up out of the water. Now, if you lived in California, you wouldn't have a choice because it would be illegal to mow your lawn because they're tyrants and Nazi-ish a little bit, but I didn't say that. You live in Massachusetts where you can basically freely water whenever you want. I can tell you, I wouldn't want it watering when I leave for work, and I wouldn't want it watering when I get home from work, because then I know, look at it, it's watering, look at that, it's watering. If it happens at, 10 at night or 3 in the morning or something, it could do it for 2 hours, I wouldn't even know.
Right.
Yeah, and here's the gimmick. If you take a look at this Open Pi sprinkler, a minute and, no, I'm sorry, 57 seconds, you can see he's using the Hunter hardware with this. So it does look like he's taking a pre-existing Hunter system and retrofitting it to be on a Pi. If you take a look at the video, and I will make sure the video is in the notes as well. Thank God our link system is working again, because when it doesn't work, I'm pretty useless as well.
Yeah, that 8-minute video there might just give you step-by-step all the way through it,
Brian. Yeah, I'll encourage you to at least look at it, at least for entertainment purposes, maybe on your HD home run.
There you go.
And when that guy's coming over for $50 an hour, you can, help him out. Oh, yeah, I know how to do that. I saw this video on YouTube. Because most servicemen like to hear that from the customer.
I'm sure they do. And I asked you, come on, why don't you join me? We can fix it together. Yeah, this is the kind of thing... I'm really not trying to discourage you, Ryan, but this is the kind of thing I'm so happy I don't have to deal with.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Because I'm more in Eric's camp. If it was up to me, I would concrete the entire lawn and paint it green. Yeah. Because I can't... I mean, I tried to mow my grass last week. Friggin' hornet came out and zapped me right in my ear.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that ain't cool. No. I was literally walking around with what looked like, almost like a tribal thing going on with my ear. It was like huge and bulbous. Wasn't good. And then my good friend, my dear beloved brother, a friend, Tracy Holtz, made sure I felt like a complete weenie, sissy punk. Because he told me last year he was on the tractor and he accidentally, impromptu discovered a hornet's nest and got stung 24 times.
Oh, man.
And I'm sitting here complaining about one. Like, wow, I really do feel stupid.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like any fun either.
No,
but I will say this. It's not easy to be more manly than me, and Tracy is definitely more manly than me.
Yeah, Tracy's the man.
Okay.
Well, I think it's kind of, hold on for a minute, though. I think it's kind of funny that you mentioned you got stung in the ear because my son was playing paintball last week, I think. Yeah, last weekend, and he got stung in the ear while playing paintball.
Ooh, wow. Man, that has to hurt. That has to
hurt. Yeah, so I just thought it was kind of funny you mentioned that.
Well, it is a small world, so that annoying ride at Disney says. There's no other links at the notes I'm looking at that I feel like we have to talk about. The only one I'll mention that if you guys are interested, go look at the notes. RaspberryPi.org, building a Raspberry Pi 360-degree camera. I mean, I don't know what's more hipster and popular right now, VR or 360 camera, which I think they could be tied together to be the same thing.
Yeah.
So you can make a quote-unquote cheap 360-degree camera after you buy the Pi, only costing you a little bit more than $15 after the price of the Pi.
Nice. I mean, if you're going to go sell your house or something for sale by owner, and you want to get 360 views, just set that, take a picture in each room, and you can make yourself a nice little 360 video for prospective buyers to check out.
Absolutely. I like that idea.
Yeah, and whenever things like this become affordable, to me, that puts extreme pressure on other companies to stop charging $300 for their 360-degree camera. At least a little bit, in my head, at least. Okay, so yeah, we definitely have that in the notes. We definitely are going to have a good amount of notes for this show, guys.
Okay, well, we'll call it off there. And if anybody wants to email in where they've been stung by things, you can send that to, Dora at Podnuts? We have mini PCs?
Mini PC show at podnuts.com, or go podnuts.com contact show right there. And if you're anything like Tracy or 5150 and you work on a farm, I know I'm a sissy, okay? I know it. You guys have much more testosterone to your body than me. I'm a suburban fella who, if I got to walk too far, I just start complaining.
On the 360-degree camera thing in VR that Dora doesn't like, we're actually giving away a Google Cardboard on the other show that Dora and I do together, the Android App Addict show. So if you're interested and you haven't played with VR or anything, there's a chance to get a free set to check it out with.
Nice.
And for some reason, Odroid, I want to say it was Odroid, it might have been Banana Pie, but I think it was the Odroid account on Google Plus, started randomly posting 360 videos from YouTube. And yet every one I saw happened to contain beaches and women in bikinis. I'm just saying.
Another good use of a $15 360-degree camera, in my opinion.
Some might say the only use. But,
okay. You pervert! Are you taking pictures of me?
This is not a camera. This is the thing that fell out of my radio earlier when I busted my radio over my friend's head. All right, gentlemen. How can people reach out to you, Brian, if they want to say hey and give you hand-holding tips on how to set up your sprinkler system?
I would say that would be at Google Plus. You can find me at Google Plus at Ask the Cable Guy, and I should respond pretty quickly.
Cool. And I am Eric Ardini on Google Plus. That is the best way to reach me, or in the the Google Plus communities of this show and Android App Addicts and Podnuts. And Dor, how about you? Anything to on how to reach you or send off for the end of the show here?
Well, I'll say the best way to continuously communicate with me is to send me an email or a Google Plus posting asking to be added to the Mattermost server. Think of Mattermost server as a isolated private IRC type AIM chat where it's not Google searchable, it's not indexable, it's just Podnutsians sitting on a server chatting privately about stuff. And then you can continuously ping me whenever you want, because whenever you want my attention, all you got to do is type the @ and start typing Dor. You'll get a little drop down, you click my name, and I will instantaneously get an email telling me somebody's trying to communicate with me. I'm really liking the Mattermost interface. I'm not encouraged by the amount of engagement I'm seeing on the server. I will say that.
I don't know. I don't know why I'm not in there more. It's not in my face enough, I think, possibly. I don't know. I have to make an attempt more.
You know, I was thinking the same thing, Eric, and I was fishing for the link because I remember having it, and I don't seem to have it any longer.
Well, the URL is easy. mm.podnuts.com.
Oh, there we go.
That is easy. mm.podnuts.com, and I'm logging in right now. And you guys do that too as soon as you get home and get on your computer, and then we can all hang out, even though my password's not working. Okay. All right. Well, we will see you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a good weekend.